Hello, everyone, and welcome into CrushTheStreet.com. I'm Kenneth Amendori, and I'm joined today with a returning guest, someone who's going to talk to us about the crypto markets, what's going on right now. Bitcoin's around $8,000. It's kind of just sitting there. Are we in for another, you know, floor fallout? I know, you know, seeing it there, it's a little nerve-wracking, right? You know, what's going to happen when it's not moving forward? I tend to feel like people get nervous and worry that, you know, we might be in for another leg down. So I'd like to get the thoughts of our next guest on this. His name is Jason Appleton. Like I said, he's a returning guest. His website is jasonappleton.com. He's got a number of things going on. He's got an upcoming conference where you can meet him and see him in Cincinnati, Ohio on November 8th and 9th. You can check out the conference link at chainwise.us. He's also launched a brand new exchange. It's in the early stages. It's at crowsnestx.com, a US-based software as a service digital asset management platform. We'll get his thoughts on that. Without any further ado, Jason, thanks for coming back with us on Crush the Street.
Of course. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, you got a quote on your website, and I think we'll start here with that, just as a barometer for where we're at. And kind of what I was talking about earlier in my introduction there, 2018 will very likely be the last opportunity for small investors to see substantial gains by being able to get into positions on a small budget. It's time to educate yourself and take action. And sure enough, we did see that 2018, we saw crypto go Bitcoin. Go to $3,000, and here we are at $8,000. And don't forget, we went as high as what, like $14,000 for a quick second here, this year in 2019. So where are we right now in terms of the crypto space?
I think we're, you know, and personally, you know, obviously I'm not a financial advisor. I don't hold any licenses for any of that stuff. But, you know, my personal opinion is that we're in a position of accumulation. I think we're in a place where, you know, we've been hit so many times in the bear market, and as we just kind of watch the price go down, we watch the market sentiment continue to go down. And, you know, I think we're at a point where I expect to start seeing some turnaround. You know, the halving, the Bitcoin halving is really right around the corner. I mean, we're talking, you know, May, but with the hashing rate being higher than it's ever been, and the you know, just the, it could actually happen in April. And so, you know, when that happens, like if you, I've done some videos myself where, you know, I've talked about stock to flow and the stock to flow value of Bitcoin as we move forward into, you know, May and beyond. And, you know, we're expecting $100,000 Bitcoin by that point. And so I think that what we're seeing now, like if I look at these wicks, when I see these really long, well, I'm not sharing my screen or anything, but if you're looking at a chart and you see these really long wicks down, where the meat of the candle's towards the top, it looks like a fake out to me. It looks like market manipulation to me. It looks like people trying to inspire fear and panic into the general retail market so that they're selling into the hands of those with the money to buy it all up before the price starts to go up. And, you know, on my channel, Crypto Crow, I talk a lot about, you know, crowing your coins, right? I talk a lot about, you know, when I go into a position, I'm holding it. I'm holding it typically long-term, especially altcoin positions. And, you know, some of that is to not have to pay as high a capital gains tax on your trades. Okay. So, there's that element to it. But also because, you know, if you're a retail investor and you're trying to get into the cryptocurrency space, especially as a trader, and you're trying to trade swings, there's no real rhyme or reason to any of these swings. I mean, for the most part, because the market capitalization is still low, the market volume pretty much across the board is still low, and it's easy for just about anybody with a significant holding to manipulate the market to go in whatever direction they want. And they understand that if we start sending this, if let's say we want to start manipulating the market down a little bit to start scaring people thinking, oh, we're going to go, because you've seen these articles and these videos talking about a $6,500 Bitcoin. Bitcoin's good. It could go to 6,500. It could go to 6,000 from here. And so these big whales that have the sufficient Bitcoin or whatever coin they're working on at the time, they can push the market price down. They can wick it down like this and just start scaring people. And then people start freaking out and they're like, oh my gosh, the video I saw last week is coming true. I need to sell now and then I'll buy back in. And the price dips a couple hundred bucks and then boom, it shoots up 500 in an hour and everybody's left with nothing. And that's the kind of mentality, that's the kind of the mechanics that that are driving the market right now. Until people start really understanding what's going on, they buy, they hold, and it makes it more difficult for these manipulators to push the market in any one direction at any given time.
Yeah, good points there. And I, you know, one thing I always sense and feel, and maybe it's something just because of my own human emotions, I feel like investors don't like sideways moves. You know, it's either got to be going up or, you know, going down, or but it, that sideways moves makes people nervous, you know, more so than, hey, that's going to go higher from here. I feel like there's this negative, pessimistic perception on what might happen to the price of something when it's going sideways. I don't know, maybe you can comment on that. And one thing you mentioned too is the Bitcoin halving. And I just want to point out the Litecoin halving seemed to be a non-event. Mm-hmm. And what are your thoughts on that? Considering that we've seen the Bitcoin halving being such a positive event for Bitcoin in the past, is there any sort of pricing that in, you know, in anticipation of what has happened in the past that might not play out the way we've seen it happen in the past? Is that possible going forward here?
I think when it comes to Bitcoin right now, anything is possible. But, you know, that's why I don't, you, look, even if you're ever, if you're watching a technical analysis guy or gal on the internet, and they're saying, you know, they always have a an if or that kind of scenario. Well, we could go up, and if we do, we could go here, and we could go down, and if we do, we could go down here. Okay, so you're never wrong, right? Like, it's this whole, it's, they're explaining the bullish and bearish scenario. But the reality is, like, well, as far as Litecoin, to be quite frank, I don't follow Litecoin all that much. I don't have any problems with Litecoin, and I'm sure it'll have its day. But I think, you know, when the creator of the project kind of removes himself from it, I think you kind of lose that that nitrous, right? It's like you can have a pretty decent car, and it may go pretty fast, but if you lose your developer who actively says, I'm just going to take a step back, and it's like your race days are numbered at that point. And that's just my opinion. Now, at the same time, you could say, well, you know, if you develop a really great car, well, you no longer need the designer for somebody else to pick up the reins and take it and drive it. So, but I think in the case of Litecoin, it's all about use case, and it's all about relationships and partnerships and who's able to accomplish what and which cryptocurrency has the most uses. And if you're going to basically try to compare a Litecoin to Bitcoin, well, the attention's going to go to Bitcoin. And so, you know, with that, as far as the halving's concerned, I don't think that I think what you see is, you know, the closer we get to the halving is when you start seeing the price momentum really begin to climb, because that's when people are realizing what's happening. You got to understand that there's still such a small number of people that are actually in the space. And, you know, it's not until FOMO starts setting in. It's not until, you know, these news articles are breaking all over the place and YouTubers are talking about the same thing all the time that we're able to catch everybody. Right. And until then, you only have a small number of people that are kind of trickling into the market and, you know, buying in or doing whatever it is they're going to do. And so I think that the closer we get to the halving and after the halving, I think that's when you start to see the price jumps. Like, even if you look at if you Google stock to flow or Bitcoin stock to flow chart, I think the first link that comes up is the Bitcoin stock to flow. And you can see exactly what's happened all the way up to now during the previous two halvings, and then what we can pretty much expect to see during this next one. And when you look at that, you're going to see there's some lagging, you know, in price action leading into the halving, excuse me, and then you'll see all of a sudden it starts to climb. And I think it's the reality of the halving setting in, the reality of the fact that, okay, now we've gone from like, 18 Bitcoin a day or whatever it is down to like 9, and there's a lot less supply. And when these miners are mining this Bitcoin, you've got half of the because a lot of these miners, when they're mining it, and then they're directly selling it onto the market because that's how they're paying their bills, that's how they're profiting. Well, after a halving event, you've got half the amount of Bitcoin being sold into the market than normal, which allows the price to go up that much quicker. And that's something a lot of people don't really discuss. And so, but that's a part of it because you have less pressure pushing the price down. Even though a lot of these miners, they try to sell over the counter and things like that, you've got some that liquidate on exchanges as well, depending on how big they are. And so, yeah, that plays a role into it. And I think that's why post-halving, you start seeing the price rise more than before the halving.
You know, you brought something up about Charlie Lee, and I had to remind myself exactly when he sold. I mean, Bitcoin's or Litecoin selling right now on CoinMarketCap for about $55. I used a $60 price. He sold his position at around $330 Litecoin.
Sure.
He basically top ticked the entire market. I mean, it didn't go much higher than that. And then here we are at $55. He can repurchase his entire position with his proceeds for about 20% of his proceeds, less than 20% of his proceeds. Mm-hmm. He can regain his entire position that he sold. And my goodness, I mean,
the question is, did he do that or has he done that?
I know. It'd be an interesting thing, but really the trade of a lifetime. Mm-hmm. If you can do that, and especially if you have the long-term belief in it. Jason, let's talk about this a little bit. You brought up mining, crypto mining, and I just want you to give us the understanding on what's going on with this right now. Are the people that are mining crypto right now, are they profitable? And I'll follow it up with a couple of questions. Is it something that people should consider doing? Is it, you know, better to mine in certain parts of the country where there's lower electricity, or, you know, why do people mine? Are they doing it for a profit in every situation? Are they just doing it to contribute to the network and be a part of something they believe in, or just let's speculate on higher prices? So I said a lot there. I'll let you.
Let's be real about it. I don't think anybody's spending the kind of money it takes to get into mining because they're just trying to help the network. You know, now, when I first got into crypto, I built a mining rig. It was an Ethereum mining rig, specifically just because I wanted to learn more about mining, you know. And you couldn't have set this up for me any better, so I have to address it. But, you know, I started crowmining.com. It's been like 5 months now. And, you know, what that is it's a co-located Bitcoin mining operation out of Siberia. So you say, is it better to mine in one location over another? Yes, because it depends on the power cost and the climate. In Siberia, it's like 0 degrees. So, you know, when you're mining out there, and then your power cost is like 5.5 cents per kilowatt hour or whatever it is, it's extremely low. Over like the national average in the United States is 14 cents. So, you know, the profitability of your mining, A, is going to be dictated by the difficulty of the blockchain at the time. And then it's going to be the terahashing power of the miner that you're using against how many watts of power per hour that mining unit is using, right? And then the price of what you're paying for that power. So there are all these factors that go into whether or not mining is profitable. And so, you know, is it profitable right now? Yes, but mining isn't necessarily, at least for, you know, people in the retail market or the general hobbyist or somebody that's wanting to learn about mining. Mining isn't, it's not necessarily about the profitability right this minute. For me, I mine because I'm interested in accumulating more. You know, I could go out and buy at the prices today. I could buy Bitcoin and just hold it. And then whatever it's worth is what it's worth. Or I could invest in mining equipment that will continue creating more Bitcoin for me over a period of 3 years, which is typically the lifespan of an ASIC miner. And so that is much more profitable long-term than it may be right this minute based on the current price of Bitcoin and the current, you know, hashing power, you know, the hash rate of Bitcoin, the difficulty, so forth and so on. It just depends on how you look at things, and it depends on where you are in the world, what you're trying to invest. It depends on a lot of different variables. Mining could not be profitable for some people depending on where you're located.
So, and it's all about the cost of the what it is. Does it ever get to a point where the cost becomes prohibited and detrimental to the success of Bitcoin? I mean, does that ever, do you see that happening, or does it always adjust? Does the price have to adjust to, you know, make it profitable? It has to be profitable. So, you know, like the cost of mining gold, for instance, has been the below the cost of the spot price in the past. You know what I mean? And so what are your thoughts on that? I mean, is there ever some sort of...
How much gold is there in the world?
Say that again.
How much gold is there in the world?
Well, I know what 190,000 metric tons have been mined, and however
how much gold will there be in the next 25 years?
I don't know what the number is.
Exactly. But we do know those answers for Bitcoin, right? And so the fact that we understand and we know exactly how much Bitcoin is going to be in existence today, tomorrow, the next day, when it caps out at the full 21 million, you know, in total circulation, you know, it's the deflationary nature of Bitcoin. And so, you know, what when you say, is it always going to be profitable to mine? Is there, you know, always going to be opportunity? Well, when you take into account the stock to flow charts, when you take into account the limited number of Bitcoin that are going to enter circulation every day, basically until the last one comes out, yeah, I think there's always going to be a time that it's worthwhile to mine Bitcoin. And a lot of people will say, well, what happens when, you know, all of the Bitcoin, and this is the day that I wait for. Like when I think about this day, I think about my kids and my grandkids are going to be the ones to see this happen. I won't, you won't, most likely. But on the day when the last Bitcoin has been mined, people say, well, then what do you get? If it's already in circulation, then what do you get? Well, what you get is you get 21 million Bitcoin that are worth an insane amount of money being transferred from point A to point B, and the miners confirming those transactions and receiving part of those transaction fees. That's what you're going to get. And on that day, when one Satoshi even could be worth a quarter or whatever the hell it is at the time, you know, mining is going to be that much more profitable, especially when you consider the fact that our mining hardware continues to grow in power. And it's a matter of keeping up with the times. If anything, the only thing that I don't like about mining is the fact that you've got the major mining conglomerates like Bitmain and some of these other companies. I know they have to be mining with next-gen equipment. And then they sell off the older equipment. And so, you know, I believe that if you were to go into a Bitmain farm right now, they're not running 50 terahash miners. You know, my guess is they're mining with some pretty powerful equipment that we're going to see a year from now. You know, and that's how they keep their competitive advantage, and that's how they continue doing business. Because and depending on, you know, you could try to, a lot of people that say, oh, well, I could go to Bitmain and buy a miner for $1,500. No, you can't. No, you can't. Because as soon as you try to put that order in, they're going to tell you it's sold out, and they're going to say, well, you can be a part of this batch. And then that batch is likely going to be late, be delayed, you know, multiple months until they decide it's time to release this older, this new hardware for us, older for them. And so, you know, mining, I've learned since I started Crow Mining with Elevate Group, I've learned so much about how mining works and how the industry works from the backs, the, you know, behind the scenes with the manufacturers and all of that. And it's like any other business in crypto, man. I mean, it's, I don't want to say dark. I think dark is the wrong word, but it's very, I've been surprised a couple times when I realized, oh, that's how it's handled. You know what I mean? It's kind of one of those things, but you know, regardless, it's still very profitable for people to get into mining. Even if I have a video on my channel where I walk through people building an Ethereum mining rig. And the difference is for any newcomers is if you have a Bitcoin rig or an ASIC, just mines Bitcoin. That's pretty much it. SHA-256 algorithm. That's what the chips are basically made and designed to mine. That's what you're going to work with. But if you build a GPU rig, you can mine a whole variety of different cryptocurrencies and you can change it on the fly. You can mine Ethereum today. You can mine Aeon tomorrow. You can mine this or that, whatever you feel is going to be valuable. Like I built my 6 GPU mining rig and I did, it's still purring away today. I'm still mining Aeon just for the hell of it. And you know, I think Aeon is going to have its day. I think it's going to come back at some point in the future. There are a lot of them. Cardano is my number one, but I can't mine that. And you know, I just think it's mining. I think that mining for people, even if it's not just for profit, I think it's exciting because you are playing a role in strengthening the blockchain of whatever your favorite project might be. And I always looked at it like I have a lot of projects that I've invested in, and I got into these projects specifically because I believe that what they offer is going to benefit the space overall in the future. And so anything I can do to play a role in helping with what right now is still the infancy of a revolution of disruption. And I feel like everybody that's in this space right now that's participating and doing something in it, I look at us all like pioneers in a new era, and that's what excites me. And so mining is a part of that, investing, holding, you know, learning about new projects, educating other people, all of that. That's what it's all about right now. And it takes all of us to push this train forward.
I love that. And Jason, I love your confidence in this. And, you know, believe me, I'm someone who has put my money where my mouth is and invested in the crypto space early. And I believe in it long term. But I got to ask, you know, even a guy like you, someone who is deep in the space and has strong belief in it, do you ever listen to the pundits, a guy like Peter Schiff or some of these others who might say, there's no intrinsic value? Ultimately, people can walk away from this and say, you know, and that's an extreme statement, right? No intrinsic value with everything that's going into it. But, you know, could Bitcoin be replaced by something else over the next number of years and then ultimately go to zero while all the value that's been put into it goes somewhere else? I mean, you know, real questions that real people have. Do these thoughts ever come into your head? And how likely or unlikely do you think that is? And kind of as we close this out here, this talk that we're having.
Look, I'm such a believer in the technology itself. You know, the technology is what got me into this. And I believe that, you know, we have some of the brightest minds in fintech, you know, helping to further what we are trying to establish for our future. Like, does the idea of a potential $0 Bitcoin bother me? No, I don't think about it really, to be quite frank. I think that the technology will rise to the occasion when necessary. And so I'm not fearful of any of that. And you say, well, what if something else were to come along and take it? Well, you know, gosh, it's such an open-ended question full of possibilities, but you know, think about the internet in its early stages. You know what I mean? Think about any kind of technology. Hell, I used to run a 2600 baud modem. I used to war dial in my neighborhood, you know, on a 2600 baud modem. And ding, 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 you know, and that was our internet back then. It'd take you 10 minutes to download a GIF image. And now look what we can do. We're sitting here chatting internationally, you know, using the internet. So the technology is going to change with time. It's going to get better with time. The use case and usability is going to continue to grow. And if something were to replace Bitcoin, so be it. Chances are I'm going to hold it anyway. I mean, and it's just like, that's a part of education. But at the same time, I don't think anything is going to replace Bitcoin, because Bitcoin isn't the end all be all cryptocurrency on the market. It is a store of value. And I see that's probably all it's ever truly going to be. It's the altcoins that are going to start driving the market with their individualized use cases. And, you know, if there's an altcoin that's able to achieve more, I mean, think about it. 80% of the altcoins in the market right now are able to achieve more than Bitcoin can. And where are they right now? So it's not necessarily about, is there going to be something that replaces Bitcoin? I think to a large extent, it's going to be about what helps Bitcoin thrive and what is going to continue rising and building and furthering the market through mass adoption, mass education, and what's going to drive a lot of these other altcoins into being traded back and forth in and out of Bitcoin. And I think that's what's going to be a lot more likely than Bitcoin ever going to zero, in my personal opinion.
Good words there. And Jason, if people want to learn more about you, what you're working on, your YouTube channel, everything you got going on, where's the best place to go? And, you know, what can they expect to find?
Me bitching a lot. me looking tired lately. That's what I look like. I just got my ass beat in an alley and I came live on video.
I saw your last couple videos. They were, you know, I mean, you know, you're strong, man. You're putting it out there. You're working hard. You're grinding. Good for you.
I am definitely grinding, man. You know, Crypto Crow on YouTube, I mean, that's where I discuss the most. You know, my channel has always been kind of about my journey. And, you know, I know that a lot of YouTubers, they do really well coming online every day, going over the latest crypto news. And I do that on occasion, but it's really not my thing. I mean, I started my channel to educate myself and then share what I learned and share my experience, my kind of rise from, you know, my position in developing mortgage companies, my transition into the cryptocurrency space and what I'm able to accomplish along the way. And I just kind of bring everybody along for the ride. I discuss a lot of like family issues, relationships. Sometimes I discuss entrepreneurialism, you know, the ebbs and flows of being self-employed, what it means to, you know, kind of push past all of the, you know, the general expectations of the public and you know, what it means to be an outlier, you know, what it means to be a rebel, you know, to go out there and try and accomplish something against the grain when other people are telling you it's not possible. And I go into a lot of that stuff, and a lot of it's just my journey. I share a lot of what I learn as I go forward, and that's kind of what my channel is about. And you know, every once in a while I might shed a tear or I might bitch and yell for 20 minutes. You kind of never know. It depends on what's happening. So yeah. And then Crypto Crow. And then I have all these other things that I have going on, but I talk about it all on my channel.
Well, hey, your time here was greatly appreciated. Thanks so much for sharing your thoughts here with us at Crush the Street. I hope to be able to have you on in the near future, especially as things start to develop. $100,000 Bitcoin. I'm in it to win it, man.
So
we'll be looking out.
Good deal. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.